to the third case this morning, Argonaut v. Broadspire.
Good morning, Your Honor. Dan Hildebrand, Mayor Brown. I represent Plaintiff Argonaut Insurance Company. In this case, Argonaut sued Broadspire for breach of contract. Broadspire moved to dismiss, saying it was not bound by the contract, and the district court granted Broadspire's motion to dismiss. Your Honor, Argonaut contends the district court was wrong for several reasons. In the first instance, it was wrong about what the contract says. In the second instance, the district court ignored the proper standard on motion to dismiss, and ignored numerous facts pled in the complaint and failed to take the facts pled in the complaint in the light most favorable to Argonaut.
I gather Argonaut didn't think it was necessary to include the original party to the contract, I'm going to say.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor, because Broadspire was our contractual partner on this matter. They were the ones who were performing the contract. They were the ones who had assumed the contract and were working with us. So, frankly, when we were getting ready to file the TRO because they stopped performing, it never occurred to my client to sue anybody else. And the argument that they were not bound because they were not a signatory to the renewal rights agreement did not occur to us. But I would point out, Your Honor, that I think the crucial contract fact here is that the renewal rights agreement and the Argonaut Services Agreement are part of a single deal. They're a single integrated agreement. Broadspire's predecessor, Natalsco, did sign the Argonaut Services Agreement.
Now, the renewal rights agreement was signed by the sellers, and it states that the sellers had the power and authority to sign, but it doesn't say anything directly about binding their subsidiaries, does it?
It doesn't, but it suggests that Natalsco / Broadspire is in fact coextensive with the seller parties, and I say that for a couple of reasons. Number one, Natalsco did sign the Argonaut Services Agreement, which is part of the renewal rights agreement. Number two, Section 5.14, the critical contact clause we're relying upon, speaks about what Natalsco is going to do. And there are also a number of clauses, Your Honors. I'll tick through them quickly. The third whereas clause, Section 2.6, Section 3.2, and Section 8.2, all of which suggest that Natalsco is coextensive with and analogous to the seller parties. The third whereas clause, for example, said the seller parties and purchaser.
So it's clear that the renewal rights agreement includes the terms of the services agreement.
Yes, it does. And no,
But is it true that the services agreement includes the terms of the renewal rights agreement?
Well, it certainly references it, Your Honor, and there are obligations that specific to Natalsco that are not within the capacity of the sellers, the insurance sellers, to perform, which appear only in the renewal rights agreement. And it's not only, Your Honor, the promise that was breached here, the promise to stop providing claim services to customers who dropped their policies that were part of the portfolio transferred to Argonaut. The other Section 5.14 terms that apply to Natalsco are they're limited to 8% fee increase escalations per year. There's the two-year performance term. None of this shows up in the Argonaut Services Agreement, and I submit, Your Honor, that the two agreements taken together as a whole clearly show the parties intended that Natalsco would be bound by and agree to perform the terms in Section 5.14. The fact that they're together as part of one integrated agreement, Your Honor, I think allows you to reach the conclusion that the agreement binds NATALSCO.
If the services agreement was part of and attached to the renewal rights agreement, why wasn't the former executed until 4 months after the renewal rights agreement?
Well, Your Honor, it may be simply ministerial. You'll know on the first page of the service agreement, its effective date is January 23rd, the same effective date as the renewal rights agreement. So I don't really think you need place any weight on the actual signature dates at all. There was an unsigned copy of the Argonaut Services Agreement attached as an exhibit to the contract. So I don't think that makes any difference at all. Because time is short, I'd like to move quickly to some of the factual inferences that the district court failed to make in our favor. Really, Your Honors, apart from who is bound under this contract, the complaint in each count clearly pleads that this contract, the renewal rights agreement obligations in Section 5.14, was assigned to Broadspire. Broadspire is a successor in interest, whether by assignment, course of performance, or otherwise. Now, the reason this matters, Your Honor, is under Illinois law, assignment is a question of fact. So Broadspire and NATALSCO would be completely remote from the seller parties. And if the insurance subsidiaries gave NATALSCO a direction to perform Section 5.14, if there's correspondence between the parent and the sub indicating that NATALSCO accepts the contract and will perform Section 5.14, that's relevant. It should be entitled to prove that at trial. By the same token, when NATALSCO was sold by its parent to Platinum LLC, midway through course of performance, NATALSCO became Broadspire. There may be schedules in those acquisition agreements which indicate that this basket of agreements, including the renewal rights agreement, was transferred to Broadspire, and they agreed to perform it. So there are any number of factual scenarios here, Your Honor, which indicate that granting the motion to dismiss was proper. Finally, I think clearly the contract clauses in the aggregate create, at a minimum, a question of fact and an internal ambiguity as to whether the parties intended NATALSCO to be bound directly under the terms of Section 514. It's easy to see how they'd miss this, Your Honor, if it was a sub. It's controlled by the parent. The parent is negotiating the deal. Claim services are a crucial part of the deal because part of the way you keep the customers in the policy of in the portfolio of transferred policies is to be able to offer the same claim services that the customers were accustomed to receiving. So it's not some, you know, sort of ancillary detail here. It's right at the heart of the agreement. Section 5.14 says NATALSCO has to, it's required, they have to themselves provide those claim services. And it says they aren't going to provide those claim services to customers who drop Argonaut. And once again, it has that 8% escalation cap, which isn't in the underlying agreement. The only sensible reading, Your Honor, is just to read the agreement as a whole and assign the obligations to NATALSCO that the contract does on the face. I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
This is an interesting side issue that you raised. Are agreements made by way of email considered oral agreements?
You know, Your Honor, I did not mean to argue that this was an oral application. I think opponent misunderstood my argument. The point about oral modification in my footnote is simply that it's common for certain types of post-execution evidence to come in by way of its extrinsic ambiguity. Here we have a course of performance, and Broadspire admitted in several emails attached to the complaint that they were agreed to perform this obligation. Of course, the other side is a different story. Once again, Your Honor, it's a fact question. We have a course of performance, admissions, and emails, and I think the district court simply failed to focus on the extrinsic ambiguity exception to the parole evidence rule.
Essel?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Jim D'Asso, and I represent Broadspire. With me at the table today is Tom Deere, who's the general counsel of the company, and Joanne Lee, who's been doing all the hard work on this case so I could get up and make this oral argument today. Your Honor, very simply, it's our position that Argonaut sued the wrong companies, as the court indicated. They had companies that they could have sued. Those are specifically stated in the contract and defined as the seller companies. If they believed there was a breach of the renewal rights agreement, they should have brought their claims against those companies.
Now, if Broadspire was not a party to the renewal rights agreement, then what was the purpose of putting in specific requirements of Broadspire's performance, such as capping its fee increase at 8% per year? In other words, why wouldn't all of Broadspire's contractual obligations be articulated in the Argonaut Services Agreement?
We're not getting on the Argonaut Services Agreement. That is what binds Broadspire, and that the what's put in the renewal rights agreement is not intended to bind Broadspire. It's intended to bind the seller parties, and I think the court got it correct below when Judge Moran said, I get the look on the court's face, I'm answering the court's question, so I don't
want to too far. Because I just am wondering why you put in specific requirements for Broadspire's performance if it's not a party.
Don't know why, Your Honor. All I can tell you is the contract is very clear who the parties are. If you look at the first page, it says here are the parties, and they're defined as Lumbermans and as American Mutual. They're specifically defined in that. Those are the only parties that sign the agreement. If you look over on page 4, where there's a definition section, and it talks about the Argonaut Services Agreement and says, this is what we're defining the Argonaut Services Agreement. There it says that agreement is going to be among the purchaser, the seller parties, and Natsco, which, so the court knows Natsco is Broadspire. They're the same company, just the different names. But very clearly, when you look at the definition of the Argonaut Services Agreement, the parties, when they signed this contract, understood that there was the purchaser, they understood that there was the seller parties, and they understood that Natsco, now Broadspire, was a separate and distinct company. And at the time, admittedly, the companies had control over Broadspire, and they could make a decision about whether Broadspire would comply with those obligations.
But in their complaint, they heard, alleged that there was an assignment of the contract to Broadspire.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think we dealt with that in the final section of our brief. They don't, number three, we make two arguments. Number one is, this was never really argued to the district court. They made the argument to the district court that these emails were sufficient to constitute some sort of agreement or whatever, and it's never been clearly articulated what the emails actually do. But they never argued to the district court specifically that their allegations concerning the assignment were sufficient in themselves to require that Broadspire be
bound. The problem is you're on a motion to dismiss, not summary judgment, which our court says that we're pretty liberal with regard to what may be proven.
Right. But anyway, if you don't argue to the district court, that's waived. So you never even get to that point. You never get to the issue of what is the standard you apply, because it was never argued to the district court, and they never can point to a place in the district court record where they said, hey, we make these three allegations in each of the accounts that there was an assignment, therefore you had to follow those. That was never made to the district court, so this court never gets to that point. Secondly, Your Honor, if you do get to the point where you address that issue, despite the waiver, I think that the cases that we cite in our brief are very specific that while there is some language that you have a very liberal standard you apply in a motion to dismiss, it is not a completely disregarding. You don't have to take everything they say on face value. In fact, the Kyle case and the other cases that the Kyle case cites by this court indicate that you have to plead the operative facts. You have to show what facts there are out there that lead to the conclusion that they're trying to prove. Here, if the statement is made that there's an assignment, they have to give you some idea of what are the facts that led to that assignment. Now, on appeal, he's come up with all sorts of things. Maybe it was in a schedule. Maybe it was in this. Maybe that. None of that information was ever pled in the district court. And as a result of that, the baldest statement in the complaint that there's an assignment here is insufficient to believe the operative facts underlying the assignment. He's got to give us some idea of what resulted in that assignment, and that's not done. The only sort of facts that are pled in the complaint with respect to the assignment are the emails, and as we have articulated in our brief, I don't think that the emails are sufficient. Now, going back to the beginning, I think there are clearly two very sophisticated companies here, or actually three very sophisticated companies. There's Lumbermen's Mutual and American Motorists, which are very large insurance companies, and then there's Argonaut, which is also a large, sophisticated company. These guys had very sophisticated counsel who drafted these agreements. The agreements, as I indicated, show they knew who the parties were, and they knew, specifically with respect to the Argonaut Services Agreement, that Natsco, now Broadspire, was a distinct entity from the seller parties. They knew the seller parties and Natsco were not the same. They further evidenced their understanding of this by having a separate agreement signed by Argonaut and by Broadspire. That separate agreement contains completely different obligations, and in fact says my client is free to compete against, or there is no exclusivity here. So I think that is what is controlling here. And there's a lot of statements that they're one big integrated agreement. That's just simply not the case. These were prepared and signed as separate agreements. They were signed separately. They have different parties. They were signed at different times. They contain different terms. Now, they refer to each other, but that does not mean that they are one single agreement. And there is not any case cited by Argonaut which suggests that just because they refer to each other, that means that they are one integrated agreement and therefore you can construe them together. That's just not the case. The only agreement that my client signed was the Argonaut Services Agreement, and that provided expressly for non-exclusivity. So with that, unless the court has additional questions, we'll stand on our briefs.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We have 2 minutes, Mr. Hilbert.
Thank you, Your Honor. First off, on the waiver point, we clearly argued facts supporting an assignment theory. The emails themselves and evidence of performance are evidence of an assignment. On page 2 of my opening brief in the district court, this is my response to the motion to dismiss. Among other things, Argonaut pled that Broadspire was the successor to Natalsco, a Kemper seller. Argonaut also attached to its complaints emails from Broadspire agents acknowledging that their company was bound. The brief elsewhere makes numerous references to the theory that course of performance is evidence of successorship. Assignment is one form of successorship. There's no obligation to plead legal theories. Also, Your Honor, I think opposing counsel is wrong to suggest that you need to somehow recite every allegation in your own complaint to withstand a motion to dismiss. I think that has its backwards. On a motion to dismiss stage, it's the district court's obligation to read the complaint and assume facts, frankly, facts that aren't there that might be apparent from the story told in your
complaint. Well, if I recall correctly, you don't require fact pleading in federal court.
That's correct. It's notice pleading in the standards rule, and this complaint more than those points by on notice. Final point on the separate agreements, Your Honor, if you simply look at the clauses cited in my brief, the Exhibit A is the Argonaut Services Agreement. It is clearly referenced and made a part of the main agreement in Section 8.1. I'm speaking from memory now because my appendix is on the table. I believe it's Section 2.6 and 3.2, but you'll find those cites in my brief. On the face of the Renewal Rights Agreement, the Argonaut Services Agreement was part of the same deal. They were executed on the same day. So with that, Your Honor, we think there are abundant facts which would allow us to survive a motion to dismiss. And I'd like you to consider, when you take the two agreements together, ruling as a matter of law, that the parties clearly, by those agreements taken together, intended to bind Natalsco, and that therefore there is no ambiguity issue here to resolve. They're clearly bound under the contract. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.